Hello, everyone, and welcome to Really Old Movies. I'm your host, Harrison Scullin, and today I have a very special guest, Rich from TurnerFan77 and Faces for Radio podcast, and we'll be discussing 12 Angry Men from 1957. So without further ado, let's introduce our guest.
Hey, what's up, Harrison? How you doing?
What's up? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, man. I feel special.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, and why don't you kind of introduce yourself to the audience, kind of talk about your channels and that sort of thing.
I'm Rich, a.k.a. TurnerFan77. I have a YouTube channel, same name as TurnerFan77. And also, I'm one half of Faces for Radio podcast with my brother from another mother, David Lowe, or you know him as the 4K Lowdown. And we have a show called By the Numbers and a show called Top 10. And they're all on his YouTube channel, the 4K Lowdown. And with those two shows, By the Numbers, we watch five new movies every week, whether they're hit streaming, physical media, movie theaters, and we score them. And then we give you our thoughts on them. And then our top 10 show is we each take five or six movies, depending on how many alternates we want to have. And we score them and just give us a top 10 list. And our new season of that is going to be movie studios. And we're kicking off with Warner Brothers, I think. Ooh, at the end of December. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited for that.
September, I mean, not December.
Not December.
And then on my channel, on TurnerFan77, I have two shows, Comic Talk, which I co-host with David. And simple title, we talk comic books. I'm a comic book guy. And then I have another show with my daughter, Malia, where I show her movies that she has no business, or not no business, I should say, she would never watch on her own. And I show them to usually 80s, late 70s movies, and sometimes some newer ones, and I get her reactions on them. And it's called What Am I Watching, Dad?
Oh, awesome. Well, and thanks again for coming on, man. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Links to all those channels and social media will be in the description. And I got to say, they got some great content over in Faces for Radio and on Rich's channel, too. It's great. I've loved talking with you guys. It's really, really cool stuff. So make sure to check that out, everyone.
Well, thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So now let's kind of get into our review on 12 Angry Men. So we'll start out with the banners here. Let's start out with the plot and kind of what are your thoughts on it and a scale of 1 to 5, what you would give the plot for 12 Angry Men.
Okay. First, I'm going to give you you want my score first?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
A 5. It is a 5. This is hands down a 5. I like how at the beginning where you get just the shot of the boy, or it's the courtroom, right? And they're in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. And you see the accused, and that's all you see of them. And then it's just these jurors deliberating for an hour and a half. The movie's an hour and a half, right?
Something It's pretty short. Yeah.
I liked that. I liked how it was just focused in one room. Yeah, that's really, you know, for me, I was hook, line, and sinker for that.
Yeah. No, I totally agree, man. I also gave it a 5. You know, I love 2 on top of it being just one room and it just kind of encroaches in on you, kind of making you feel a little claustrophobic. I also love that we're kind of figuring the crime out with the jurors as well.
Yes.
I love that. Like these new things keep unwinding. It's almost like we're a part of the deliberations with them. I love that. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. That's going to come into play with one of your other categories, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And then let's see. And I also love too that each of the characters is kind of unique and different. They have their own different arcs and kind of their own different interpretations of things. I thought that was really interesting too. And that'll definitely be more in acting, but just how all together, all these different unique perspectives are drawn in together. I love that.
There's something I noticed, and I haven't noticed it in modern day movies, okay? there was respect for the elder. There's a scene where the older gentleman is coming out of the restroom and you see this guy get up and go over and help him with his chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That stood out to me because I don't see that in modern movies. You don't see that respect for elders.
No, not at all.
And that just really hit me. That just stands out for me in this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. No, for me too. And also, I don't remember which juror it is, but he kind of stands up for the old man too. Like he says, don't talk to him like that, you know?
Yeah.
You got to respect this guy. Mm-hmm. I love that.
And you don't see that in modern movies.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And what's interesting too, though, for me is, even though this was made in the 50s, this is very applicable now. This whole plot, everything about it, very applicable today.
Yeah. You could transplant that to 2023.
Yeah, absolutely. It really
could. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything else you want to add for the plot or you want to move on to acting?
Let's go on acting because there's some good stuff in here.
Yeah. All right. So what are your thoughts on the acting?
Okay. My score, 5 again.
Yeah.
this was a blind watch for me. It's the first time watch. And I loved it. Acting, starting with the guy that I forget what you call. Is it the person that's in charge of the voting? What is that called?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
But he's at the head of the table.
Right, right. I think he's juror number one even. Mm-hmm.
And then you just go all the way around. Each one of those guys was fantastic. I mean, you got the jerk that was worried about going to the baseball game.
Yeah.
I kind of identified with that.
I was going to say.
Because I love going to the ballpark. But you also had somebody's life in your hands, you know. Yeah, but I wouldn't get that crazy as he did.
No.
Then you got the stubborn guy who played that fantastically all the way to the end. And then when you see him get his final, who changes his vote and he breaks down. Oh man. Doubt. I mean, I felt that.
Yeah. No, absolutely, man. It was super raw. I mean, well, like you were saying too, you know, all of these, and I was mentioning earlier too, like they're all unique and different. And what I love too, though, even though, you know, there's like a really prejudiced guy, there's all these different characters, they still kind of respected each other anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody still got to say their piece. They got to, you know, prove their points. Right. And I love that. And, you know, I was mentioning earlier about the arcs, especially the very last juror, when he finally breaks down, you know, that's like beautiful acting right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't like that guy up until we hit that arc, into that final, that final scene. You're like, oh, and then you just felt for him.
Yeah, absolutely. That was like, oh man, he's a real dude too. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. He was just afraid to let his feelings out. And I think that's a sign of the time too, you know, because at that time you have to be macho in the 50s and stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
And I also liked the dude that started the Reasonable Doubt, you know, the way he just slowly, he was like, here, I'm not saying he's not guilty. I'm saying there's reason to doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And he just slowly, just on top of one thing after another, just kind of, and he slowly persuades the other jurors.
Absolutely, man. No, Henry Fonda, he's that character. He's amazing in this role.
Yeah. I didn't recognize any of these people.
No. Well, let's see. Have you ever seen While You Were Sleeping?
Mm-mm. I know the name, but I have not seen it.
Oh, okay. Well, the guy who's wanting to go to the baseball game, he plays one of the old guys in that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
That guy did a good job. The one guy that annoyed me a little bit was the salesman.
Oh,
Yeah. And I know that's what his job was to do. He played it perfectly because he annoyed me as I watched this movie.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I love to, It's the advertising one, right? Or is it?
Salesman. Yeah.
I just love too that he just kept flip flopping. Like he,
mm-hmm.
he didn't really have an opinion of his own really until the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was great all around. And I like too when the guys who were super stubborn, when they finally caved, I guess you could say, it was very unique to them. Like the stockbroker guy, he figured it out because of the glasses thing. And then the prejudice guy, when everybody just like walks away and just looks away from him and he just talks and talks and then he just sits down and doesn't talk anymore. Like it was great how unique each of that was.
When you bring it up the glasses part, I like that scene too, because he's like, okay, now you can't tell me she needed glasses, dark, you know, through the windows. And then he felt almost like a lawyer.
Yeah, he did. In
that scene where he was just presenting the facts. I dug that scene too. Oh, and when he's walking, I that kind of.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, just all around stellar cast, man.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Here's one you probably know. So the guy who has glasses, who kind of has a higher pitch voice, he voices Piglet in the Winnie the Pooh movies.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So it's kind of funny how he goes from this kind of a movie to then a Disney movie.
Oh, yeah. This movie, again, I can't say enough. I did not expect to like this movie. But wow, was this good.
Absolutely. All right. Great talk about directing.
Yeah. I won't guess what my score is.
There you go.
Okay, because it kind of goes back to what you said earlier about how the room just kind of slowly gets smaller. And what I liked, I don't know if you consider this directing or cinematography, but how you start to see the sweat.
Yeah.
On the guys, and their body language even changes throughout the movie as the time goes on. I liked that. And I don't know who directed this. I don't know.
His name's Sidney Lumet. I don't know if you've heard of him or not.
Does he have any other popular movies?
Oh, you know what? Let me pull it up real quick. But
okay.
keep talking about your part.
There's like I said, the body language and the beads of sweat on him. You know, you get the sweat stains, and he's able to get all these characters, he's able to performances out of them. You know, and it's all believable. There's not one I don't believe. He's able to, you know, hey, we need this from you. Can you give me this? And they all give them to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I found a couple here you might have heard of. Have you heard of Network from 1976?
Was that did they just remake that not too long ago?
They might have. I'm not sure. I've never seen it. Dog Day Afternoon.
I've heard of that.
I think that's with Al Pacino.
Yeah.
So he's made a couple movies in like the 70s and 80s. He just passed away in 2011. Not just passed away, that was 12 years ago, but
it just seems like yesterday, don't it?
Right. But it seems that he's kind of known for more like dramatic, more serious tone films.
Like this one.
Like this one, yep.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not familiar with this genre or this age of movies, I guess like you'd say. Did he do all the adapting from the play and just did it himself? Or did he have like a screenwriter or?
Yeah. I haven't looked too much into that. What I do know though, that's interesting is some of the cast who are in that teleplay were also in the movie.
Playing the same
characters. So it must've been a collaborative effort because Henry Fonda, from what I can read here, he wanted Sidney Lumet to do it because he did like TV dramas and whatnot, and they just brought in the cast and whatnot. They just wanted to adapt it to the screen just because of how great of a story it was. So
that's a fantastic story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And this was his feature film debut. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. He came out swinging.
Yeah. A home run, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, because did this make a lot of money? Because that's something that me and David talk about on our show.
Sure, yeah.
Because the box office.
Let's see. So the budget for it was... Sorry, I wasn't more prepared for this, but
No.
It's $300,000 and made $2 million at the box office.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Especially for 1957, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's pretty good. I wonder, that's in today's money, that's probably a lot.
Yeah, probably 150, mm-hmm. 180 million, I would say.
Now, me and David did a show on one of our By the Numbers, we talked about Women Talking.
Mm.
Are you familiar with that movie?
I remember when it came out. I didn't watch it, though.
Okay. Now, I wasn't familiar with 12 Angry Men at the time of this movie. And David said this reminded him of 12 Angry Men when he watched it, because it's women talking in a barn. And I definitely see the similarities. That if whoever did Women Talking heavily influenced by this movie, because it's their characters in that Women Talking almost kind of match the characters in 12 Angry Men.
Oh, that's awesome.
They have all the same almost personalities.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually what I really love though about this movie is that it can transcend time. We can all relate to each of those individually.
Have you ever been on a juror?
I've only been to like waiting and then they sent me home. And I've actually been disappointed because I actually want to be on jury duty for like a murder case. I think that'd be awesome.
I've had to call here. I don't know how it works in California. Here you get a letter in the mail. Hey, you've been selected for jury duty. You got to call every Sunday for a month. That's all we had to deal with, too. Okay.
Pretty much the same, yeah.
So, yeah, I've never got past that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, the hurry up and waiting is very, very long process. Like,
is it?
I was there for like 6 hours just sitting there.
Oh, man.
Watching HGTV. It was brutal, man.
HGTV. They couldn't put on Turner Classic Movie Channel for
you? No, they couldn't do anything like that. You know, it's public service, right?
Yeah. Back to the directing. I like also the little just looks that these guys gave. Not with the words, but the looks, too, mm-hmm. that they would give each other. I don't know if that's directing or if it's just the actors, you know, doing it themselves, you know, without, hey, do this. I like that, too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I gave it a 5 as well. I mean, he did a fantastic job getting these emotions out of these actors.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And he did so much with so little, you know, it's just the one location for the whole movie pretty much.
Yeah. And it kind of looked like maybe two cameras, one camera maybe.
Yeah, if that. Like I remember when they're all coming in the first time, it's a super long continuous shot and mm-hmm. then it cuts. It's like, whoa, it's like a 10 minute scene, I think.
Yeah, I was really interested to know if how many cameras they used, and this probably didn't take long to film either.
No, if I remember right, it was only like 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And it was like a hurry up and get it out type of thing.
And another thing I loved, I don't know where it falls in, the end of the movie, too, when that older gentleman introduces him by name, his name to him.
Yes.
That was touching.
I love that.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, we don't know anyone else, and they all go their separate ways, no talking. It's crazy.
Yeah. That just shows you don't need it either, because you got everything you needed from this movie in that one room.
Yep.
I like that. There was no, I don't think there was any wasted time in the film. I mean, they got right to the point. There was no filler.
No,
and
yeah.
I think that needs to come back. As I watch a lot of modern movies. Me and David watch tons and tons of new movies. And I would like them to go back to this, you know. Tell a great story, yes, but don't give me wasted stuff that I don't need. We need more of that.
Absolutely. And I just think it's the rise of, you know, sequels and everything needs to be universe. Like, no, it doesn't. It really doesn't.
If you want to do that, start with a good story. Don't start with, okay, we're going to do 10 movies. Here's just the first part. Tell me a good story first. Then if your story is good, build out.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, back in the old movie time, you know, like, you see Dracula and Frankenstein, and then every single sequel afterwards is just awful because they forgot that very thing, telling a good story. It was just a cash grab after a while, and we're seeing that now, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a question I had for you is, was there a lot of sequels back in this time of filmmaking?
Not in the sense that we have it now. I would say no, because the only things I could really think of would be like the Universal Monster movies and then maybe some like detective stories. But the thing is, too, is some of them, like the one I'm thinking of right now is like the Thin Man series. Those were more like extended television episodes, if that makes sense. You know, because there wasn't TV yet. So they had these kind of serialized type stories that they would tell.
Oh, wow. See, why can't we go back to that?
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love modern movies. I'm not bashing modern movies, but I would like to scale it back a little bit. You know, don't give us some original ideas. And if you want to do a sequel, don't do it every year. Wait a few years, you know, and then put a sequel out when you have the right story.
Absolutely. No, I wholeheartedly agree with that. And, you know, with now, what I think has happened in the industry now is we've kind of reversed the old model. The old model used to be you'd have like 20 movies that cost $100 million altogether, and then maybe one or two $150 million movies. Mm-hmm. We've reversed that.
Oh, yeah.
It's like 300 million dollar movies and then one or two 20. So,
yeah.
No, I think it needs to be reversed. But it's, you know what? Just talking about old movies, it's not new, you know, we've been through this before, and what changed was like in the 70s and whatnot, they stopped doing sequels and focused on smaller stories like 12 Angry Men and whatnot.
I don't want remake after remake, but I would like to see how they would adapt a 12 Angry Men today. I'd be curious. That would really pique my interest.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at the plot synopsis for the television version that came out in the 90s, and it's, you know, pretty much beat for beat exactly the same. But what's interesting is the character who's prejudiced, he's a like a black supremacist from like the 60s. So it's not like a white guy races to a Mexican guy. It's a black guy races to a Mexican guy. So it adds a different layer of complexity to it. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. A remake I wouldn't be 100% against.
Yeah. Ugh. I just hope they don't go the route of, I haven't seen Psycho, but I know a lot about it. I just know that the exact shot for shot remake is just awful.
It is. I've seen it. Gus Van Sant, I think, did that. And it's terrible. Is it Michael Vaughn? Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, Vince Vaughn.
No.
Yeah. Not a believable Norman Bates.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
Yeah. So I'd be hesitant because who knows what they'll do with it.
I mean, I would go see it because just for the fact that I love this movie, I would go see it.
No.
I'm more forgiving. I'll admit that. I'm more forgiving.
I'm not.
And that's okay. That is okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of film, let's talk about cinematography and special effects. So kind of what are your thoughts on the camera work? There weren't really any special effects, but
I think there was. This is where it goes to the sweat. The folk, you solely see the sweat on their foreheads, the sweat stains. I dug that. I really, really did. Even I'm not used to 50s movies. Even the rain, when it started to rain, that looked real to me.
Yeah.
it really did. I was like, and I liked that it was in black and white. To me, that's a special effect.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, because I'm a modern movie goer.
Sure, sure.
So I'm going to give this a 5 too.
Awesome. Well, I also gave it a 5, and, you know, kind of talking what you're touching on, I love that it is in black and white because it kind of shows, you know, when they start and go in there, they think, oh yeah, it's an easy case, kind of black and white, super easy, then it's more complex.
Yeah, they even say black and white. This is, yeah, they do. And there is one shot I really liked. It's when, I forget who goes in the bathroom. There's two guys go in the bathroom, and one's washing their hands and trying to get the paper towels to work. The shot is kind of like from around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that. I thought that was unique. I didn't expect a shot like that in the 50s. I don't know if that's just my being naive about this time in filmmaking. I didn't think they had fancy stuff like that. I don't know. But it was just a really cool shot. It's almost like they were peeking around, trying to spy on them. That's the
like a fly on the wall almost.
Mm-hmm. I dug that.
No, yeah, I did too. And I also liked when they would do kind of a close up in there too. It was like kind of close in their faces and you could still see their expressions and whatnot. No, that was great.
Yeah. The facial shots, fantastic. Like you just said, that sells the emotion in that movie.
Yeah. And I want to say too, like they become more and more prominent by the end. Cause like by the end, everybody except the last guy, it has like a close up on him and then on each of them. And I love that. It was so cool.
No, I have a question because, again, I'm not familiar with this era in filmmaking. How do they do that rain? That's like, because it looks real. It didn't look fake. It looked like, hey, it's raining outside. Let's shut the windows.
Yeah. I'm wondering because I don't know for sure for this movie, but kind of like nowadays they have these like machines that were like about the width of the whole set. And then it would just drip water. Like it was raining.
Oh, okay. Actual
water. Yeah.
That's pretty, that really just tickled me in a way because I was like, oh man, that looks real, like real rain. And they're shutting the windows. And I mean, I wouldn't shut the window because it was hot as heck in there. And I thought cool rain air come in, but that was just me.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if it was kind of symbolic of we need to keep it closed and keep everything contained in here.
Oh, yeah. To make it more claustrophobic, like you said earlier. Yeah, I get that.
Because by the end, we're like in their faces.
You are. You really are.
Yeah. I thought that was fantastic. So I also gave it a 5.
Awesome.
Let's see. Is there anything else? The
shot we kind of talked about earlier, the shot of the guy's feet as he's walking. They bring the camera down and they go into his feet and his back of his legs. I liked that a lot too.
Yeah, no, I did too. That was kind of a more humorous moment in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Because like, how is he gonna walk that out?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you're in this tiny room, but he did it. I mean, I don't know if he did it, you know, right, but enough to convince people.
Yeah. Well, I just love too, though, they kind of pre-establish he's an architect. So then the audience is like, oh, okay, then yeah, he would know how to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great shots in this movie that I didn't expect. I thought this was going to be shot like a Kevin Smith movie, just put the camera down and go. But no, they go around the room. They go like, fly on the wall shot, they bring the camera down, along the feet. So I was impressed. I didn't expect that.
Enjoyable. Yeah. Well, and again, too, that set piece was super claustrophobic. Mm-hmm. So it's incredible they're able to do that in such a small space.
And it makes it believable with their acting.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think another aspect I really like too might be more in the acting, but they did a lot of show and not tell. You know, like you could see what they were thinking, if that makes sense. Like they didn't have to say, oh, I think this guy's wrong, or oh, I think he's right. They just had the camera on their face, you know, doing something with their emotions. I love
that. Yeah, the facial expressions. Uh-huh. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, I think that goes back. I think that's in with the acting too.
And yeah.
I also think the cinematography too, because you got to bring that camera in right on their face without, you know, like making it jarring. And that cinematographer does a great job with that.
Yeah. And they, you know, they do good to not freak out with the camera on their face either.
Mm-hmm. And that goes back to their acting. I mean, they all seemed like pros. Like they've been doing it for a long time.
Yep. All right. Well, let's move on to music and kind of your thoughts on that.
This is where I'm not going to score it as high because it didn't really do a whole lot for me. Mm. I think I'm going to go at like a 3.5.
Okay.
On this one.
Yeah. No, I actually did lower. I gave it a 3 because this movie is more about the acting and about the characters, not really about the music. Because I actually think if it had music, it would have thrown everything off.
Yeah,
we wouldn't have the real raw emotions.
Yeah, it makes it unrealistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but you don't want to lose them raw emotions for this movie,
right? But if you want to find a soundtrack for this movie, it's probably 3 minutes long, so don't go bother shopping for it.
Right? Are you a soundtrack guy?
No, not really. But me neither. I know lots of people are, but I think there's like one song at the beginning, one at the end. That's it.
See, for me to be impressed with the soundtrack, the music of the movie has to stick with me. Mm-hmm. Not just, you know, like, okay, I know that song. Yeah, if I know it, it doesn't mean it's going to stick with me.
Yeah. Like the Superman theme, Star Wars theme. Like if you hear a couple notes, you know what it is. Yeah. But this and just doesn't do that. Yeah.
Yeah. It transcends beyond the movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, and this didn't have that.
No, but I don't think it needed it, honestly.
Yeah, not at all.
All right. Well, let's go on then to our final. Well, I use this for my Letterboxd scoring, but you don't have to, of course. But what are kind of your overall score at the tallying it all up?
Well, I scored it already on my Letterboxd.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I gave it 5 stars. I really did because I was impressed with this movie. I keep saying it over and over. I was impressed. I loved it. I did. Again, I didn't like the movies you picked for the high five.
So next time, right?
My expectations were not. I did not like. I was going to like this. But you picked a movie, man, that, oh my gosh, I want to add this to my collection.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yeah, I gave this a 5, and I am going to recommend this to people.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm on the same boat. You know, I gave it a 4.6, which I'm rounding to a 5. So, yes, it's one of the best movies I've ever seen. It was excellent.
If this is out of 2023, I can't put this on my top 5 list, top 10 list for movies.
Or 7.
Yeah, I know, or 7. But this is one of the best movies I've watched in the year 2023. And this is from 1957. You would have asked me last year if I want to watch a movie from 1957 and absolutely loved it. I would have told you you're crazy. No way in hell I would have watched it. I said, you're nuts. But yeah, man, this movie was really, really good.
Yes. I've convinced you. You're coming to my side now.
Yeah, man. And there was one movie I actually enjoyed that you picked. I won't say enjoyed it like I did 12 Angry Men.
Mm.
for the high five was the samurai one.
Oh, Yojimbo.
Yeah, I dug that. That wasn't as bad as Gone with the Wind and some of that other stuff you made me. You know, I'm glad you picked Gone with the Wind because I would have never watched it. Now I can say I watched it and appreciated what it did for film and all the art that went into it and the cinematography and the costume design, because that is all art and it needs to be appreciated.
Absolutely. Well, and that's kind of one of the things that I love about doing my channel is trying to show people there is an art to these old movies. There really is. Mm-hmm. Like, let's not forget about it.
Yeah. Because today's movies is all about the flash and art and no substance to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But here, there is art in this 12 Angry Men, and there's a great story to it. It goes hand in hand. It's not like one's high special effects and the story is garbage. Like the latest batch of Marvel movies, that's how I feel.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and what's cool too about this movie is it came out in 1957. And if you're in the classic film community, you know that the years 1939 and 1957 are some of the best years of cinema ever.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
what's famous about 1939?
So that's the year like Wizard of Oz. That's the year Gone with the Wind. That's the year, was it Grapes of Wrath? No, Ninotchka. Like there's like 10 movies that came out that year that are on like all the 100 best movies ever lists.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then 1957, same thing. There's like 10 movies. There's this movie. There's, I think On the Waterfront, I want to say. There's a couple more that from this year are just phenomenal movies, just random year.
See, I didn't know any of that. Now my question to you though, Harrison, I almost called you Abby. Harrison, is I think I've asked you this before, but I don't remember your answer, so refresh me. How did you get into these old movies? You're like 15 years old,
right?
How did you get into these movies?
Yeah, well, how much time you got? No.
No, tell me. I want.
Yeah. I think just long story short, you know, growing up, I was very close to my great grandma and she would show me movies like It's a Wonderful Life. And I think, you know, all the old Disney movies too. She had them all on VHS. So just growing up with that. And then just over the years, you know, I've just started watching more and more like Citizen Kane. I watched that in high school. That one really changed my views of old movies forever. Cause you know, I was like, yeah, I like Disney and all that. But once I saw Citizen Kane, I was like, oh no, there's a real art form to this.
Like, see, I've never seen that.
Well, I don't know if you'll like it or not, but I think you'll appreciate it.
I'm sure I'll appreciate it. Cause I appreciate Gone with the Wind. I really did. Like I think I was telling Evan the issue I had with Gone with the Wind, but I didn't know it until he told me about the mic situation with females. And they all seemed so whiny and high-pitched, and it was annoying. And then he explained it to me, you know, how to do with the mic, so they had to, like, change the voice a little bit so the mics would pick them up, and I had no clue.
Yeah, well, they had a lot of weird technical things like that that we don't even talk about now.
Yeah.
If you ever watch Singing in the Rain, it's a musical, I know, but
I don't mind musicals. I don't.
Is that just David then?
That's just David, yeah.
Okay. Well, in that one, they actually kind of talk about how when they're transitioning from silent to sound, how difficult it was. So they couldn't figure out where to place the microphone. And one of the characters who's a very famous silent actress, like in the movie, she had a very thick Southern accent and she just couldn't transcend into the sound era. So they had to hire someone else to kind of dub her lines.
Oh, wow.
Because that happened a lot. Either you learned how to talk or you had someone dub your lines.
Do they still do that nowadays, you think?
I definitely with singing. I would say with singing, they still do something like that.
I was curious if they still do that. Because I know they even did it in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know if they still did that or if that was like, again, SAG rules or the Actors Guild rules and stuff.
Yeah, who knows with those guys.
Yeah, right. So I think that's interesting. You know, how old are you? 25, 26?
25, yeah.
25. You just had a birthday, right?
I did, yep.
Yeah.
So happy Labor Day. Thank you.
And the fact that you appreciate these really old movies is blows my mind. It really does.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, and you're unique. And that's why I like you, is that you, I mean, I like you for you because you're an awesome dude. But I mean, I like you, what you bring to the table. It's not, you know, look at this Blu-ray I got, or look at this, what's on my shelf. It's no, it's about the movies, you know, it's about what makes those physical media copies here. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Well, and just talking about that too, you know, I feel like the conversation has changed from talking about the movies to talking about the boxes they come in. Cause it's like, to me, it is judging a book by its cover. You know, it's like, what's the point of that if you're not going to actually watch it or talk about what the whole thing is about?
You know? Yeah. And yeah. I was all about that box with the judging the book by the cover. Cause that's how my channel started. I was a physical media collector and I still am. But I don't go day one and buy everything. I just wait for it to go on sale. If I really want it, I buy it. But now, you know, doing the show with David, we go into the movies. It's not about, you know, if you got the steelbook, if you got the slip cover. And we go into it, and it makes you really appreciate the process of filmmaking. You know, we always say all film is subjective, and it really is.
No, absolutely. You know, that's why the MGM slogan is Ars Gratis Artis, or whatever it is. It's Latin for art for art's sake.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I messed it up. But it means art for art's sake, because what I feel like now is it's content for content's sake. We forgot all about art. It saddens me.
It does. Like, some of the, like, David picked Alfred Hitchcock movies for a couple months back for our top 10 shows in the alphabet. And he blew open the door for me for Alfred Hitchcock. Yeah, I knew The Birds. I knew Psycho. Those are great movies. But he showed me Vertigo. And my mind was blown. I was like, oh my gosh, this was so good. And then he shows me Rear Window.
I love Rear Window. Yeah.
That was better than Vertigo. I was like, how? How can these movies from what was the 50s, 60s, these came out?
Those ones are the 50s, yeah.
How can those movies be that good with the limited technology and blow today's movies out of the water with storytelling? You know what I mean? It's just, that blew my mind. And so now I'm in a Alfred Hitchcock kind of phase. I know, I just ordered volume 2. It just came out so long ago. The box set. And I want to get North by Northwest. David said I need to get that. And then what did he talk to you about?
He did, yeah. No, that movie's fantastic. I think that's my favorite Hitchcock. It's amazing.
And then Nate from Geeks and Flicks told me volume 3 is coming out in October. I think I'm going to pre-order that.
Yes.
Because, yeah, I'm in love with Alfred Hitchcock. It sounds weird, but yeah.
Well, he was dead, so it's okay.
No. Yeah. Yeah, I know. His filmmaking, I've only seen 4 films. I've seen Birds, Psycho, Rear Window, and Vertigo, and I love them all. I mean, everybody loves Psycho. I mean, you can't go wrong with Psycho.
I still need to watch it. I haven't seen it yet.
You never seen the original Psycho?
No, I haven't seen either. And I've watched 11 of Hitchcock's movies, and I haven't watched Psycho.
That might be a good thing, because when I seen, just knowing Psycho, that was the only thing besides Birds, you kind of pigeonholed my opinion about Alfred Hitchcock was just like that, and he's not, because Rear Window is nothing like Psycho,
in my opinion.
It's just it was just from the, is it Jimmy Stewart, is that his name?
Yep.
Oh, he's fantastic in that.
Yeah, he's great. And so is Grace Kelly.
And that Grace Kelly, that is a movie star. She's so beautiful, you know. And I don't want to sound sexist or anything, but you don't have that today. You don't have someone that commands. When she walks in on screen or on camera, you're like, wow, it just blows you away. You don't have that in modern cinema today.
No,
maybe
I
with Margot Robbie, maybe. You know, that's the thing that just pops in my head as for a female actress, but nothing like Grace Kelly. That's her name, right?
Yeah, yep.
Mm-hmm. She just like takes your breath away when she comes on screen because it's like she commands it. You know, just, I don't know. I that film is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I agree because, you know, like the opposite of that, you have someone like Jimmy Stewart, or when you watch North by Northwest, Cary Grant, he commands the screen too, just with their talents and their abilities and their good looks too. I mean, you can't ignore that, right?
Yeah, that's like, what I mean. Like those are bona fide mega movie stars to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it had a sense of class to it that I feel like we're missing too, that I love. That's what I love about old movies. They have a lot of class to it.
Okay, this is going to sound weird, and I don't know. There's a scene in Rear Windows where she's kind of being sexy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think she's getting dressed or something. But they don't go the nudity route. You know, but it's still sexy. You know what I mean? They don't have to show her body. You know, and I think maybe today's cinema needs to do more of that. You can still be an R-rated movie. Leave something for your imagination.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that just goes back to the show don't tell type of thing, where they used to do, well, in Hitchcock movies, and also because of the Hayes Code, you know, they couldn't show nudity. They couldn't do any of that. Yeah, they couldn't do that. So they found creative ways around that to kind of slip in things that the censor boards wouldn't get rid of. And you know what? I actually appreciate that. I don't like excessive nudity, violence, or any of that. So I appreciate that they found ways to approach that, but they didn't have to show it, you know? Like they left it to the imagination.
Yeah, and I think that benefits, you know, for the storytelling. Okay, I'm going to go to Oppenheimer, okay? I love that movie. That's my number one movie of the year. There's a scene in there with, I forget her name. She was Black Widow's sister in Black Widow.
I can't remember her name.
She's topless in this movie.
Oh, really?
Does it need to be in there? You know that she's this Oppenheimer's mistress, okay? Mm-hmm. But you don't need to see her chest.
Oh, man. Okay? Why would they do that? That's a bummer. Yeah.
It's weird. Weird that it's in there. Because it to me, it doesn't need to be in there. And she could have easily had a nightie on, a bathrobe. But instead, she just like all laid out and her chest is exposed. And I thought, because it's really weird. It's jarring because it doesn't fit with the movie.
That's a real shame. I'm not going to lie. I'm very disappointed in that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Christopher Nolan's ever shown nudity, has he?
To my knowledge, no.
And I don't even think of Memento. I remember there's a girl, I think she's in her bra and panties, but I don't remember him showing nudity before.
I don't think so.
Yeah, which that's why it's jarring for a Christopher Nolan film. People might blast me saying, hey, you know, but if you're just speaking from the art form, it's very distracting.
Yeah. Well, they don't make them like they used to, right, Rich?
No, I mean, and I didn't know they made them like this until recently. And I'm appreciating older movies. I really am.
Yeah. Well, great. I've converted another. No.
No, dude. I appreciate you, man. Like, again, I would have never watched those five movies you picked before, and I never would have watched a movie called 12 Angry Men. Never in a million years. So I thank you for having me on the show and having me watch this movie.
Absolutely, man. I'm glad it worked out because,
did.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it before. I've heard a lot of great things about it, but I'm just glad it's really good.
Yeah. I mean, I heard nothing but great things. I mean, when I told people, oh, I'm watching 12 Angry Men for Harrison's show, and you're like, oh, you're going to love that movie. It's like, am I really though? Am I? But yeah, I did.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, anything else you want to add before we kind of close today?
No, that's it, man. I just, again, thank you. I appreciate you, Harrison.
Of course. Yeah. And why don't you go ahead and plug your stuff again?
Well, you can find me on Instagram at TurnerFan77. Find me on YouTube at TurnerFan77. And head over to the 4K Lowdown's YouTube channel, where you will find the Faces for Radio podcast shows by the numbers and the top 10 lists. That's it.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on, man. I definitely
thank you for having me.
Yeah, I definitely want you back on in the future. And Dave as well. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dave would love to come back on. I know Dave.
Yeah. Well, and thanks again, everyone, for watching and listening to today's episode. And make sure to follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Really Old Movies, where I talk details about the week's particular film. And new episodes are released Saturdays, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And then video versions on YouTube on Mondays at 7 p.m. All right. Well, thanks again, Rich. And
thank you for having me, man.
Yeah. And thanks, everyone, for watching. This has been Really Old Movies. I'm your host, Harrison Scullin. Take care.